It's time once again to step out, step up, and step into the Coming Out Lounge, a safe space to be you and your truth with Coming Out Coach Rick Clemons. Rick's expertise in the coming out process has helped hundreds of men and women ignite their inner desires to powerfully step out of the closet and into the light of living authentically as gays and lesbians. Freeing you from the feelings of guilt or shame, Rick offers take action tips for basking in the glow of self-love, easy to implement tools for wrapping yourself up in the warm embrace of self-acceptance, and take it to the bank advice on how to step courageously into a powerful, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Each week, the Coming Out Lounge brings you heartwarming coming out stories, insights for living authentically as a gay or lesbian, and challenges you to step out of the ordinary and into your extraordinary life. Pull up a chair, cuddle up with the truth of who you've always been, and let's spend an hour in the Coming Out Lounge discovering how to energetically step out, step up, and step into living your truth. Here's the host of your show, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hello, Closet Busters. It's time once again to stop the closet dwelling and to step out, step up, and step into living your powerful truth. In fact, it's time for you to step into freedom. Be freely who you are in yourself, in your own way. In fact, that's the reason I'm bringing today's guest on. He's a guy I've come to know over the last year. And I guess the best way I could describe him is he is truly a freedom fighter in his own right. In fact, he likes to call himself a recovering entrepreneur. He's done a lot of stuff in action sports and media and entertainment. He's built a few businesses. He's even had the opportunity to work with some rock stars and B-movie greats. And one of the things that he's known for is his underwater breath holding, which we'll get into when we start talking to him. He's also authored a book, and he's done some recording. He's traveled the world. And the thing I'm most jealous about is this guy has found a way to split half his time living in Canada and the other half of his life living in Costa Rica. And to me, friends, this is what it's all about. When we talk about freedom and coming out and being exactly who you are, whether it's your sexuality, being an entrepreneur, being in a right relationship, it's all about coming out of the closet. And that's why I wanted to bring my friend Perry Gladstone onto the Coming Out Lounge today. Hey, Perry, welcome to the show, buddy.
Rick, what an honor. What a pleasure. Thanks.
Well, it's my pleasure too. And you know, when we hooked up last year and got to know each other through a mutual friend, and then we went to Jonathan Fields Good Life Camp together, I got to know you a little bit better. And I'm like, man, this guy is somebody I want to keep on my radar. And then you had me on your podcast, and then I decided to relaunch the Coming Out Lounge. And so here we are today, man. And I guess from what you told me before we went on the air, you just are recently back from Costa Rica, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I usually come back to Toronto sometime in May,
right?
Depending on whether or not it's warmed up.
right, exactly.
And it hasn't, so I'm really disappointed.
Well, you know, sometimes those things happen and we just got to move right through them, which I know you get that whole thing about moving through stuff. So you know, something you shared with me just before we started recording was you even brought something new into your life, haven't you?
Yeah, I brought a puppy home with me this year, and it's been, you know, what's funny, Rick, is I used to always tease my friends who got dogs about having starter kids, and I had a dog when I was younger, but of course I also had parents around to help.
Sure.
So I'm going through all of that sort of early stuff, right? You know, right. Being woken up at all hours, my sleep patterns interrupted, dog needs constant attention.
Right.
It's really interesting how, I mean, you know, I'm not the first person to say this, but it's a good thing they're cute.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
One of my favorite things that applies to this kind of thinking, there's a guy named Brian Swim who has some amazing talks about the way the world works and the universe and everything else. And at one point in one of his discussions, one of his seminars, he talks about his two daughters and how they were the most... how did he put it? He'd never encountered anything so resistant to his life before he had kids. And it's such an interesting and amazing journey to be able to go through this process where you're being challenged in ways that you would never necessarily choose. Right? You know, your patience, your ability to love, your just everything on every level. And I realized that, you know, I don't have children, so I don't speak from that experience. This is as close as I've gotten.
Sure.
I have my nieces and nephews, but it's really fascinating to me to go through this and have that challenge and really see how I respond to it. Mm. Like to really pay attention to my own behavior and the way I feel about it. I don't mean to over psychoanalyze this thing, but I think it's really easy for us to get used to ourselves.
Yep.
Being a certain way, which is, you know, kind of a segue to a much bigger discussion.
Well, I love that this is where we actually started, because so much of what you've already said is parallel to the coming out journey. I mean, from the moment that we take on and start to realize our desires and our needs are much bigger than what mm-hmm. we're allowing ourselves to experience because of who we are and our sexual orientation. And
right.
then to go, okay, well, this is going to take a lot more work. This is going to take some being awake in the middle of the night and getting up and kind of feeding our soul in those moments. And then, as you said with Brian Swim's statement, I love it, so resistant to life. We're sitting mm-hmm. in this space being so resistant to the truth of who we are that we have exactly. to start paying attention, just like you pay attention to a newborn baby or to a new pup in your life or a new cat or whatever the new thing is. You have to pay attention to this so that you can get better at being who you're meant to be with that person, that baby, that thing, whatever it is in life. And it's pretty powerful when we realize, wow, this is truly like giving birth.
I think it is in some ways. And I'm also not a woman, so I don't want to even begin to think that I know what that experience is like. However, I see it kind of in two pieces or two parts. We have to really, truly be okay with ourselves. I mean, and that's what I hear you just speaking to yeah. accept the person we are inside or the person we truly want to be. So that's the first part. And then the second part is to be with someone else, whether it's a relationship with me, with my puppy right now, or right. with another human being. You also have to get over yourself enough to show up for that relationship totally. So it's not like you do one and then you do the other. It's this constant back and forth.
Right.
And being able to allow yourself to move between those two spaces. Okay, right now. And even sometimes it happens in the same moment, right? And I think that's the big part of the challenge is, am I the person I want to be in this moment? Am I reacting in a way that I'm okay with? Is that representative of the person I really believe I want to be? And at the same time, am I being respectful of the thing that's right in front of me?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really interesting juxtaposition when you become aware of those things. And I think it's easier with new relationships to pay attention,
right.
because you sort of settle in otherwise. But it's, to me, that's the constant work to do.
Absolutely. Well, I love this piece you brought up about being between the two spaces of figuring out who we are, but then knowing who we are because we've gotten used to being that. Mm-hmm. It's the constant struggle as humans, whether we're talking about coming out of the closet or starting a new job or having a new puppy in our life. We kind of know who we are. But then this new thing starts to bring in the new nuances that we got to figure out how we want to be with that. And
or challenge them, yeah.
Or challenge them, exactly. It comes from that space of, you know, one of the things I talk to a lot with my clients who are coming out of the closet is, okay, you're going to go through moments where you're going to go, this isn't me. And that's okay. Because in those moments that you're trying to figure out, okay, but this isn't me, that's when the magic's going to start happening because you start to redefine who you are.
Yeah,
but then there's going to be even more moments that once you start to define who you are in your own self, whether it's your sexuality or, you know, as you grow into, okay, I'm really not meant to be in a relationship right now, and you start to accept that, or, you know, you suddenly come into a job and go, okay, I'm really not supposed to be here. As you go through those moments, you're also going to get the pressure from other people. And this happens to my clients coming out of the closet all the time. They start to finally become themselves. And then whether it's somebody they know or someone in the gay community is like, oh, no, well, to be really gay, this is who you are. They may not actually say those words, but sometimes they will actually say those words.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, but wait, that's their definition of what it means to be gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender. And I think it's so powerful when you have those juxtaposition moments of, okay, I know who I am. I'm kind of firm on this foundation, but oh, wow, now that gap, that chasm starting to open up because, okay, this is who I think I'm supposed to be. You got to kind of find your way to fly through those moments.
Yeah, yeah, I agree completely. That gap, I think, is everything, because that is the place in which you get to experiment, try out, and feel, maybe more poignantly, how does it feel? And when we don't step into that gap, we don't give ourselves the opportunity to have those experiences, to try those feelings on. I think when we spoke, when you joined me on my podcast, we spoke about this idea in a different, somewhat different context, but I like to use this analogy of trying on the dress. And as young people, it's normal for us, especially as teenagers, to, you know, try stuff on. Go out and we're like, okay, I had a mohawk, right? So I shaved off all my hair and I went outside and went for a walk. And the point is to see what reaction I'm going to get.
Right.
Right? And then to see whether or not I like myself in that context. Okay, I'm getting this reaction. How does it feel? Is this who I want to be?
Right.
And if not, you know, the next day you might try something else. And as younger people, it's easier to do that. There's more room, or for whatever reason, the way our brains are wired at that time, we can try these things out.
Sure.
And if we don't like it, we go home, we put a different dress on, and then see what reaction we get then.
Right.
And it's not just the reaction we get from other people, it's how we feel about that reaction. And that's another way of talking about this gap idea.
Right.
But as we get older, we forget that that's okay to do. Or we get entrenched in this idea, whether it's, you know, societal, familial, tribal pressure. People who say, just like you were just describing, well, this is what it means to be gay, or this is what it means to be successful, or this is what it means to be a husband or a wife. And we start to get used to hearing that stuff, and it comes from all sides, right? Like, we're bombarded with it from, you know, through marketing. We're bombarded with it through our customs and values and all the familial stuff. It's so hard to feel like you get to try anything out. And you get to have your own response and your own reaction.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I think what you're bringing up is this sameness piece that everybody's like, okay, well, yeah, you can do that. But if you're going to do that, this is how you do it.
Right.
And
or you can do it until you're this old. And then
Yeah. And I know as I'm working on the new stuff in my business, we're starting to do a lot of exploring around this. What is this differentness that people are? And why can't we love our differentness? And what does it mean to finally say the word sameness be damned, so to speak, yet honoring the sameness? Because there's a piece of sameness that is the glue that holds us together as a humanity. But it's that uniqueness of that differentness that sets us apart to go be that and respecting it. So, and it seems like from what, you know, everything that you've shared with me along the way, there came a time for you where this needing to be free really was your own coming out journey, right?
It was. It trumped everything.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I've been very, very lucky in my life. I had an interesting family scenario. I grew up with a brother and a sister, two dads, and a mom. Parents, you know, got together, had a kid, separated, married each other. So there was like three kids with different sets of parents. We all sort of had one in common. So it was a unique situation in that. And thankfully, everybody was really great together, you know, and supportive. So we had a lot of love around us. But the reason I share this with you is because, and I didn't know this until much later, my brother and my sister and I all have completely different ways of seeing and understanding the world around us, even though a lot of things were similar for us.
Sure.
But each of us had a unique set of circumstances within the family. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, you take that stuff for granted when you're young, but when you start to get older and you see, I mean, your friends reacting differently is one thing because they come from different environments. But when your family acts differently, it really sort of gets you to question why.
Right.
You know, why is it okay for me to have this experience and be totally comfortable with it and my sister not to?
Mm.
You know, why are her fears different than mine? And that sort of began my journey into, for lack of a better way to put it, this self-discovery. Mm-hmm. And as I went along that journey, and I did a lot of interesting things in my life, and got married and divorced and, you know, different relationships and all this different stuff. And each time I'd sort of come back and say, and I'd get help with it. You know, right. Therapy is amazing if you get the right person, just like coaching, and have that chance to really, you know, dig in a little bit. I started to realize that there's a common denominator, and maybe I'm not sure if there's a through line here that makes sense, but in my head it does. As I look back and I said, okay, well, why are my experiences different than the people around me, the people that I'm closest to? I started to realize that I have a very particular way of going through the world. And now the way I would describe that is that for me, the most important thing is that I have to feel free. I have to feel free to be able to make whatever decision I believe is right for me next. And it doesn't mean that I don't make commitments. In fact, I make a lot of commitments. And I enjoy doing so. But I have to always sort of reserve this right to have the experiences I want or need in the moment.
That's powerful.
And there's so much more to it, but I just don't want to dive into this.
Well, no, I get it. No, because what you're bringing forward is this piece of, you know, I think so often, as we go through these journeys, whether, and again, I'm going to say, whether it's coming out or, you know, to be your sexual self, or coming out as a cancer survivor, whatever these things may be, coming out as a divorcee, whatever these things are that we tend to create, it's that piece of finding your own through line. What is the thing that yeah. consistently carries you through? Exactly. What is that thing that makes it work for you? You know, and as I'm going to come back to the stuff I'm building right now, and the through line for me is I really need to be able to do this from a space where it honors me. It honors me in the way I look at abundance. It honors me in the way I look at being of service. It honors me in the way of inspiring. I can't go do it other ways, because if I do, yep. then I'm fully out of alignment with who I am.
That's exactly.
This is why this kind of conversation is so important for those who are coming through the closet doorways to be truly in their sexual orientation and in their truest sexual self, is you got to do it your way. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, you're going to keep fighting it. In fact, I just got off the phone about an hour ago with a client and working through some of this, and I could sense the fighting of, but what if I did this, or what? Right. And I finally just said, okay, yes, what if you did, but what if you did that from what you want to do,
yeah.
rather than what you're hearing other people telling you how to do it? What would be different? And I tell you what, I mean, I get a lot of silent moments on the phone, yeah. as I'm sure you do when you're working with your clients.
Oh, yeah.
But it was like one of those very, very deep silent moments. And I knew I'd struck gold, because that was right. the thing that he was looking for, was the validation to give himself that permission to say, yes, I'm going to do this my way. I'm going to yeah. do it my way, not out of a bitter, God dang it, I'm going to do it my way and you go screw yourself. No, it was, I have to go do this my way for my own good. And it was a really powerful moment, because when he came out of that silent moment and I just kept holding, and which is one of the things I would encourage, it's kind of, here's a little tip for everyone out there that's listening to Perry and I this morning, is silence is truly golden.
Oh yeah.
Hold the space. If somebody's coming at you about your sexuality and the first thing we want to do is react and we want to fight back, trust me, the more you can take what they say and you just hold it in silence, you just hold that space, it's going to benefit you, and it's going to actually benefit them in a whole new way that you haven't even discovered yet. So that's just a little tip kind of to be thrown in here. But so you've had these experiences, Perry, you're doing a lot yeah. of stuff. You know, as you've come through your own different versions of closet doors and into this really cool world of working with leaders and stuff to help them like really cut through their own crap to find their own freedom, what have you really started to see as a commonality of, and maybe there is no commonality, yeah. but a commonality of how people define freedom? What is something that you could say to that?
I'll tell you, there is always common denominators. The freedom piece of it itself, I like to leave undefined, mm-hmm. because it means something different to each of us. Yep. You know, I described to you that freedom for me means being able to pursue whatever mm-hmm. I'm interested in. For somebody else, the freedom might be the ability to make a commitment, you know, or freedom might be the letting go of whatever old story they've been telling themselves. And usually that's what it comes down to.
Sure.
I like to use this sort of language of old story, new
yeah.
story.
Yeah.
But what I can tell you is a common denominator. So our individual needs or desires are different, and definitions of freedom, just like definition of success, are different. But what's very common is this feeling of isolation. Mm-hmm. And especially with the clients that I work with, because they feel, and I'm going to suppose that it's probably something you come across a lot with your people as well.
No, it's the first. It's the first thing.
Yeah,
because here we are, is we can't tell anybody this. This is this gigantic secret. So what happens when you can't tell anybody something? You go hide away. Yes, you may be physically present, but there's a piece of you that's constantly hidden away. It's in isolation. So I'm so glad you brought that up. And
it's a big deal because you don't feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so this is why I think you and I get each other so well, because I mean, you regardless of the position in life, it's that same basic, you know, need and it's that same obstacle. And so, you know, when I'm working with whatever, you know, CEO of some big fat company, you know, who feels isolated because he can't say what he really feels.
Yeah.
Because if he dares open his mouth to anybody about what's going on in his mind, or the doubts he has, you know, or, you know, the what ifs that she has, because there's always a what if,
right,
then it's going to undermine her position, you know, or something like that. And I can see very much, and I remember from other, you know, earlier times in my life, where it feels exactly the same way when you're questioning something else about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that isolation's a really big deal. And being able to hold that space, the way you just spoke about that, I thought was really good. Because that's ultimately our job,
mm-hmm.
is to be there, hold that space for someone so that they do feel safe, and acknowledge the situation they're in, validate their concerns, and then give them a safe place to try that out, to try out the idea, to say it out loud, to offer them you know, a confidential sounding board.
You know, as you were talking through that, one of the things that I always encourage clients to do is, once you realize somebody can hold space for you, and this is why as they're coming out, you know, I always encourage them having, you know, their go-to group, so to speak, even if that go-to group is one person, mm-hmm. or two people at the very most, and let them be the people that can hold space for you, but also start getting in the habit of holding space for yourself.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because if you can hold the space for yourself in those moments when you feel like there's nobody else around, instead of going, there's nobody around, there's nobody here who can hold this for me. Oh, wait, no, I can do this for myself.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes very powerful. It becomes a space where we can start to walk through some of these things. Doesn't mean I'm suggesting that we go without any other human interaction. Not at all. But I think in these moments where we're like so focused on, if I just had somebody to hear me, then kind of take your own personality and split it apart, so to speak, and go, okay, well, I'll hold space for you. Tell me what's going on. And then you kind of look at yourself and go, well, you know, I'm feeling really isolated. I'm feeling really unsafe right now. Well, tell me more mm-hmm. about that.
Yep.
When you start having these kind of conversations with yourself, just in the moment you start to actually have that internal dialogue in that very safe kind of bubble. I know, just as I was even doing this, you know, right now, I felt some different changes in my own physiology just saying the words. Because it's like, oh, wow, we're saying it's okay to have this conversation with ourselves and to say, oh, let me take care of you. We have been so conditioned in society to say, oh, it's not cool to take care of ourselves. We're here to take care of everybody else. But taking care of you is the first step of really, really powerfully being able to step into doing it really well for others.
But if this is true.
This is where so much of this happens. And I think that's why people come and do the kind of work they do with us, whether it's coming out or leaders in business, is because there is no safe space. They don't feel they have that safe space within themselves or, you know, with other people to make this sort of stuff happen.
It really is the common denominator that I find.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I like your suggestion here. I talk about this, you know, using my own language. I talk about being your own hero.
Mm-hmm.
But all of that sounds a little grandeur, and I think it's easy to listen to someone talk about it, but it's hard to do when you're not used to it.
Right.
And to develop the habit, I guess what I want to say is I agree with you 100%. A lot of people that I find need more support. They need tools.
Yep, I agree.
And sometimes it's the simplest stuff. Like when I said earlier, this idea of who do you want to be, you know?
Yeah.
So that's one way to do it. But even that, it takes a little bit of effort. I find for myself, I mean, this may sound silly, but I do it while I'm cooking.
Mm.
Because I love to cook. To me, it's another wonderful way to express freedom, because I never use recipes. I buy whatever strikes me, you know, and I take it home and I make something out of it.
Yep.
Or half the time I just make something cool out of whatever's there. It's one of my favorite things to do is to walk into someone else's house and just come up with something special.
Yep.
Even if there's only three things there, you know, three ingredients. So I love that expression of creativity. To me, it's a form of freedom. What I like, you know, what I do, my favorite part of the cooking is the creation. The habit that I've developed for myself is to acknowledge it, that I'm doing it, and congratulate myself for it.
Mm.
And that's why I'm saying, it may sound silly, but I love to have a glass of good wine.
Yep.
While I'm cooking and feel proud.
Yep.
Feel like I'm doing a good job, that this is going to be really great. And doing that for somebody else isn't so hard.
Right.
But doing it for yourself is where the work is. Because I never did that before. I love to cook for someone else, but I will eat cereal out of the box.
Yep.
Rather than make a meal for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So the times that I do it, or I remember and I go, hang on a sec, I deserve this. I need to treat myself well, and I make the best sandwich ever, or I, you know, whip up something on the stove. That's the moment to go, yeah, and I'm doing this for me, and yes, I deserve it, and yes, I love myself.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, boy, is there a change. You feel it. You feel good. And that's a great way to start the process.
It's very much so the beautiful foundation that starts to give us, as you say, the practice of doing this over and over again. And in fact, it's interesting that those words came forward today, because in my new program that I'm developing, and I don't want to give it all away right now, but there's a piece of it that is talking about the play, the practice, and the people. And how those three things integrate into the play of being fully in your uniqueness.
Yeah.
But it takes practice. It takes practice just like yoga. It takes practice just like, you know, getting ready to run a marathon or, you know, do a cycling event. It takes practice to go be in our uniqueness, to go to that drawer of who we are and pull out something new and say, oh yeah, this is me and I'm going to be okay with that. But it also involves people and allowing, you know, ourselves to let people see us, but then also inviting others to go to their play and practice of being who they are. So it was interesting when that word showed up. That was the first thing that crossed my mind. Like, okay, he's channeling everything I'm building right now, and I love it. But it's because the play, the practice, and the people are so much a part of this whole journey. We can't do this without being playful in our pursuit of freedom. We can't be happy if we don't playfully say, yes, this is who I am in my sexual orientation. We can't do any of this without practicing either. We have to practice how we are, who we are. You know, I know for me, it's taken a lot of practice to finally be very comfortable and secure in who I am and as a gay man, as a gay father, as a husband who brought a lot of havoc into a woman's life. But it took a lot of practice to finally go, I'm good with who I am. I'm completely good with who I am. But it also took a lot of people along the way.
Certainly.
It always takes those other people along the way to help us get where we're going. So one of the things I know you do, and I want to touch on it before we wrap up everything, is you've done this cool thing about being able to hold your breath underwater. So tell us a little bit about that, because there's a tie-in here. I'm going to tie it all together, but I want to just hear your story about this, man.
Well, okay, so my greatest passion outside of sort of seeing other people's mojo is surfing. Mm-hmm. And I traveled the world, you know, to do that. So I'm on this trip with my best friend, and we're staying at this little hostel, an Italian couple who didn't speak much English, and at the time I didn't speak any Spanish or really any other language. But when we booked our room or showed up, you know, and they said, okay, we've got this little room for you, and here's the kitchen. One of their prized possessions that they showed me was this giant pizza oven that they'd shipped over from Italy. This is in the southern part of Costa Rica, in the middle of nowhere. Mm. I should put it in context. So having a pizza oven was just like, what? And that night for dinner, we didn't have pizza. We had this giant fish that she cooked on a big pizza platter whole. Mm-hmm. And it was so... just everything about that moment was like, wow, cool. And I knew she cooked it in the oven. And I asked her husband, did he catch it? And he was like, yeah, and he points. And leaning against the side of the house, still dripping wet, is a spear gun. Mm. And so, you know, with some sign language and some pidgin, Italian, Spanish, English,
right,
he told me the story about how he caught the fish. And I, in that moment, it was like, I have to learn how to do that.
Wow.
And it's not that I got to kill things. It was that this idea of meeting the fish in its own environment, of not throwing a line in the water and seeing what comes up, but actually going down and being there. And you know, no tanks. This isn't scuba diving. It's breath hold. So suspending my reliance.
Yeah.
On everything and being completely immersed in that way, I just was like, I have to try this. So when I got back from that trip, I didn't try it then. I sought out this guy who trains world record holders, this guy named Kirk Kroc, who ended up becoming my coach and coached me to my own record, which was an amazing story all in itself, I'll spare you. But I went and did a course with him. He taught me the ins and outs. I ended up doing some work with him, helping teach other people. And that led to me doing my own record. And it wasn't that I needed to be on the books or somewhere. It was just that I really wanted to see what I was capable of. And I wanted to know how much time can I spend in this place? It's like meditation.
Sure.
Where I'm giving up my physical reliance and even my mental reliance on all the things that keep me alive or what I think keep me alive. And finding this new place, this new state. And whether it's, you know, for 30 seconds or 3 minutes or whatever, it's this amazing journey that you take every time.
Right.
It's truly incredible. So, but, you know, I'm also competitive. So once I got in there, I was like, wow, okay, how far can we take this?
Right.
And Kirk was like, okay, well, come to this competition. I ended up on the Canadian national team. I actually ended up as a judge traveling the world, judging world records.
Wow.
But so I don't know what part of it.
I wanted to share. So what's the longest? Give us the longest time you've done this.
Well, this is a long time ago, so it doesn't really matter. Like, it doesn't hold
right
anymore. My record was 6 minutes and 1 second.
Wow.
And the longest I'd held my breath unofficially was 6:45. But, you know, that was 10 years ago. And the record now is in the 10 minutes. So it's hard to even imagine. But the cool part about it, the really cool part about it, and this is what I learned from Kirk, is that anyone can do it. And it's just learning, you know, there's the physiology of it and the psychology of it, and learning both sides and going little by little and doing the practice, as you say. You know, Kirk just did... he just trained Tom Cruise for Mission Impossible. There's a stunt in Mission Impossible that's about breath holding. You know, it incorporates all this stuff. It was Kirk that made that happen.
Wow, that's cool.
He could do it with anyone. And that means anyone can do it.
Yeah. And I think this is a really cool place to start to wrap things up and to really see that no matter what it is that you're going through, whether it's coming out of the closet to be gay or lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or you're coming out to say, I no longer can be that leader in this corporation the way they want me to be, it's all about meeting that fish, that big fish that's holding you back in its own environment and coming face to face with it.
Yeah.
And realizing you can do your own holding of breath just like anybody else can, because anyone can do this. Anyone can come out of the closet. Doesn't matter where you're at. Anybody can do this. You just got to believe you can. And you got to get the tools to help you do it. And you got to get the shifts in thought and the shifts in where your head is and how you look at things and their perspectives. But you can do it. And if you haven't learned anything more from what Perry and I have been talking about today, it's about truly becoming your own freedom fighter in your own right. So, Perry, you know this is called the Coming Out Lounge. And at the end of each segment, I always ask one question. If you could give anybody any piece of advice about coming out, whatever it is, whether it's coming out, you know, to be in a new job or coming out to say, okay, I'm having an affair or I'm coming out because I'm gay, just anything that's that thing that's holding someone back. If you could give them any piece of advice to get themselves over the hump and to just come out and come into being who they are, what would that be?
I'd say love yourself.
Mm-hmm. So important.
Because ultimately, asking for help is critical, and there's people like you, you know, thank God there's people like you there, Rick, to help. But ultimately, we have to love ourselves.
Mm-hmm. That's where it all starts, every bit of it. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, buddy, I want to say I appreciate you being here, and if you'd like to connect with Perry, his website is PerryGladstone.com. Again, PerryGladstone.com. I'm so glad we got to share this little bit of time with each other again, brother.
Yeah, me too. I really appreciate your time. Thanks,
Rick. You bet. And if you've really enjoyed what you've heard today as Perry and I have talked, you know, there's always the opportunity to show us a little bit of love on the various ways you hear this podcast, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. You can always give us a rating and review, but as I always say, I only want you doing that if you feel really compelled to do it. And also, you can join me over at Facebook at The Coming Out Coach. And of course, you can always do a little bit of tweet love at Rick Clemens on Twitter if you like. And if you're going to talk about the show, do me the favor of using the hashtag #ComingOutLounge. And I think that's about all the laundry list of stuff I'm going to ask for this show. So, and with that, I'm going to say again, thanks, Perry, for being here. And for all of you who are listening, never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping in to living your most powerful truth to be you just as you're meant to be in the world. And until next time, I'm Rick Clemens, the host of The Coming Out Lounge. We'll catch you real soon.
Thank you for joining us today with The Coming Out Lounge with your host, Rick Clemens. Make sure you tune in with us next week, same time, same place, for The Coming Out Lounge.